If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Wow.
Everyone, and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing?
I don't like the way you really gripped your fist there as you said Pete Donaldson. Chris, I've just woken up from a dream. It's very early in the morning here. It's a little bit later for you, obviously, Chris. And I've just woken up from a dream, and you were in my dream.
Really? Was that a good
stuff.
Dream?
Well, functional, I'd say. You, Connor Vier, who I've never actually met in real life, and Pete, Premier 2 Pete, we are in a room, and you guys have a lamp that you need turning on, and I had to rewire a lamp for you guys, and I felt like a real dad. You silly little boys with the little lamp that you couldn't get working, but don't worry. Pete fixed your lamp in the dream, so you can enjoy the warming light of a standard, just standard lamp, literally a standard lamp. I'm proud of my performance.
Interesting.
Didn't even need any tools. I just think some of the wires had got frayed, but don't worry, everyone. I fixed the lamp for Connor, Pete, and Chris.
Maybe it's fate. Maybe it's fate, because we actually went to the video that's coming out, Wacky Weekend, this week. We went to a ryokan called, like, Lamp Ryokan. So maybe.
Oh.
And I didn't tell you about that, I don't think.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. I don't think you did. I mean, it would be a weird thing for you to say, Pete, we are going to a ryokan called the Lamp Ryokan. unless this story, this ryokan had a great story behind it being called Lamp. I mean, that is proper, some kind of, like, astral projecting. I don't really know how
that's
that works.
Right.
Kind of like we are connected over an entire ocean of watery
some
content.
Some real Carl Jung synchronicity right there. Right there.
Very weird. Very weird.
It's weird, isn't it, how dreams get, like, progressively shitter the older you get. I remember I had one the other day, and it was just like, in the dream, Charlotte was like, we're out of milk. And I was like, oh, I should probably go and get some milk. And I woke up, and I was like, oh, that was shit. Like,
God, I
want
some milk.
Dreams are supposed to be an escape from the mundane kind of reality, and they're just.
Was this your cat's
older.
Dream? This sounds like a dream a cat would have. I want some milk. This is what we drink.
It's just my dreams are mundane. It's like, oh, I've got to get some salmon. I've got to go and get some shopping. Like my dreams.
I imagine living in Japan, because when to get any money out of a bank, you got to go with your hanko and 5 hours of spare time. It's probably quite a lot of admin involved in living in life in Japan. It's not all bloody lamp ryokans and eating steak, is it?
That it is not, Pete. That it is not. But it's a good video, actually. I think I swear we must have mentioned this place on the podcast. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. But we stayed at this ryokan.
If you did,
where...
I wouldn't have bloody remembered it. I almost guarantee that, mate.
From the man he started like 3 podcasts off talking about his glasses being glare proof, to the
correct.
Point viewers were like,
correct.
Not Pete talking about those fucking glasses.
No,
again.
No. They're only talking about it because I started talking about it. I started to. I fronted up to me being very confused, all right? And they're only talking about because I was talking
fair
about
enough,
it.
Fair enough. I'll let you off. But right. Yeah, there's a cool video coming out this week. And we stay at this ryokan, and there's no electricity, there's no Wi-Fi. And for someone like Connor, who's like never had a dull, like never been a moment in his life where there's like no Wi-Fi or internet. Like if you hang out with Connor, he is glued to his phone. And he's like looking at a meme or looking at fucking some weird Candy Crush game or something.
He's got to stay on top of things. He's got to stay on top of things.
He does.
Because if you don't, the meme will devour you.
Tis true. Tis true. You've got to stay on top. But it was quite fun watching him get like deprived. You can watch him in the video. We get on this bus and you sort of wait at the side of this road and this bus turns up and drives you off to these mountains. And on the bus, you can watch your bars of internet be like 5, 4, 3, 2, gone. And then it's gone. And then you get to the ryokan. And what I found was like there was moments at the ryokan when I was like, I was about to shoot something. I was like, I should probably Google that and fact check it. Pull out my phone. It's like, no, I can't.
No, I've got to work on my memories and my knowledge, and that's all gone because I've always got a computer in my pocket.
We're stuffed. We're stuffed as a species, aren't we, without the internet? but it was really good, actually, and I hope the video captures it. I'm not editing it. My amazing team of editors are working on it around the clock as we speak. But it was really nice waking up in the morning, and there was like a little kerosene heater in the room, right, to keep you warm. And there's a candle above, and the candle gives you light, the kerosene gives you warmth. You're not allowed to switch off the candle, weirdly, because there's like a weird lighting mechanism. So when you check in, they're like, whatever you do, don't switch off the lamp. It's like, what happens? Right. What happens if I switch off the lamp? What creature will come from the forest and devour me? It's like, no, it's just effort. We just don't want to put it on again. So you sleep with this lamp on.
It's a real lamp. Well, it's just kind of, an electric
lamp. It's an
oil lamp. Oil lamp, right, okay.
Oil lamp. So you've got an oil lamp.
Tell them that's not good enough. Again, put it in the reviews. It's not good enough. Like, it's like torture. It's some kind of weird outboarding torture situation.
I don't know if you would like this place. I know I certainly did, because you're sitting there, it's freezing, right? There's snow everywhere, it's freezing cold, and you get into your room, you've got this kerosene heater puffing away, and the room smells like a fucking oil factory in Qatar. It smells really strong. You walk in, you get a headache. And after about an hour, your body adapts to the smell of the kerosene. And the headache goes away.
I am oil man now.
you walk out more oil than man by the time you're done with this place. And so you fall asleep with this lamp on, this little like flicker of this oil lamp. I actually use my pants and put them over my face to block out the light. They're not so good bit about that idea.
Fantastic.
And and it's nice. Like, I wake up in the morning and I couldn't like doom scroll and look at how rubbish the world is and how everyone hates me for some mundane reason. It was nothing. I just looked out the window and went, yeah, this is quite good. This reminds me of a simpler time. A time of windows and simplicity and just the mountain, the snow, the sound of the stream. I loved it. And interestingly, the other guests there, we noticed the largest proportion of people there were actually single travellers, like men and women just travelling alone. And we went into this like big dining room, and there was candles all over the ceiling, as you'll see in the video. And it looked a bit like the dining hall out of Harry Potter, the fucking Hogwarts like dining hall. And it's just all these people just sitting alone, like munching on a fish, and they've got this big fish on a stick. It's great.
You're just in a big dining hall, and everyone's munching on a fish on a stick, and everyone's just trying to get away from society and humanity.
It's a dream.
I think if the police raided that place, I'm just saying that there'd be some good eating, all right? And just a lot of people on the run by the sounds of things, and you and Connor covered in oil and you with your pants on your head. Reprobates, the lot of it.
I'm not selling it, am I? But no, maybe you're right, honestly. Good. If I wanted to escape from life for a bit, that is where I would go again. And I sort of...
munch on a fish stick.
I don't think Connor hated it. For several reasons. Number one, no internet, no Wi-Fi. The whole time he was like, I have an important meeting at 10 o'clock. Of course. All day he was like, I've got an important meeting at 10 o'clock. We must leave the ryokan, first bus that arrives. And then we got on the bus. We went back to civilization. He looked at his phone. He went, the meeting's tomorrow. I made a mistake. Fucking annoying, man. Anyway.
Connor. He probably just wanted to get away from you putting your pants on his head. He goes commando, famously. He has no pants to put on his head.
I didn't put my pants on his head. That would prefer.
Why not?
That's a very
share the wealth
move. But no, really, I came away thinking like this is the future. Like, no internet, no Wi-Fi. Go and actually break from civilization. I realise it was the first time in, I don't know, a decade without internet for longer than, say, 12 hours or so. Right?
Right.
And, yeah, and for Connor it was the same. So it was really quite cool. And people will be like, but you could do that any time. You can switch off your phone and sit in a room. Mm. But you can't really, because the electricity is always there. The internet's always there. It's always one bar there to connect to. To actually be forced away from that and have no choice but to experience no electricity and no internet. It was really cool. Sounds like I want to go to prison at this point. Even prison has electricity.
And the great thing about that is that you can do a delicious crime beforehand. So just enjoy a bit. And if it's really bad, solitary confinement. You got to do some awful stuff to be in solitary confinement or something
that
political.
That is true. That's true. what I've noticed is the incredible team who make the Abroad Japan podcast happen have forgot to write a listener story in this week's episode.
Have they?
But
I
luckily,
can see one.
Can you?
I can
what
see one.
What the fuck
one?
Am
yeah.
I on then?
Are you
what?
Looking? Are you looking at the running order of the 28th of the second? Oh no, wait.
Yeah.
Have I? Yeah. I think it's confusing because they've put the March month, which is the one that we're in, they've written it as February, and that's confused you, Chris.
I've defamed my team. I can't believe I didn't believe in the team.
They've still
team.
Got something slightly wrong, ever so slightly wrong. That's all. They copied an old template. That's all. That's absolutely fine. They forgot
shocking.
That it was March instead of February.
Absolutely, I'm infallible. I never make mistakes.
It's not like you read them before you even start the show anyway, so don't worry about it.
It is true. I come into these, right, we read out these stories, guys, are like, I've never read them before. You can usually tell because I'm equally shocked and dismayed as we make our way through it. And this story...
And sometimes annoyed that you don't like the news story. It's very funny.
It's true. It's true, because like sometimes
to be fair,
I get two
minutes before we start. Chris gets no minutes before he starts because he's got a more complicated setup. I'm in my back bedroom.
It's a nightmare. And I sort of come in and I read the story, and sometimes the story is like, there's no moral. And I need narrative structure. I need a narrative structure. And it's
I
went to Kyoto and looked at a temple. It was good, guys. Have a good one. Like, that's not a story. That's an anecdote. Let's hope Evan, right. And he's called himself Evan the Idiot. Let's hope Evan has written a story with a narrative structure. And it begins, hello, clattering Chris and pattering Pete. After watching Charla's video titled, If We Got Married in Japan, it reminded me of our wedding in Japan nearly 13 years ago. My wife, and lots of people didn't read the title on that. They were like, I thought this was a marriage video, but it wasn't. It's like, you got the word if.
It's
the word if.
Yeah. Like when O.J. Simpson said, if I killed her. Yeah, that one. That's
the same.
Tough.
It's the same. The power of if. My wife, a Japanese citizen, and I, a Canadian citizen, were married in a beautiful Shinto shrine just beside the Odawara Castle at the tail end of cherry blossom season. Bloody hell, that's amazing. While preparing for the wedding, we had a choice of wearing suits or kimonos. And of course, we opted for kimonos. The ceremony was beautiful and went off without a hitch as we said our vows in front of the kami shrine. After the ceremony, we were brought to a dining room where speeches were given and my wife and I were to crack the top of a sake drum, an act that's supposed to bring good luck for the marriage. I'd done that one time at the start of new year at the school. It was so much fun. The principal made me and some new teachers like stand around a drum of sake, right? And you get a hammer and you smash it in. And it was a bit awkward because it was like, it's Nissan, bang. And the fucking sake sprayed all over the principal. And I was like, oh, is that supposed to happen? It was a very stern looking man. And he didn't seem too pleased.
Is that acceptable in a school to be spraying booze around like it's the Formula One?
Well, it's their tradition, it's their culture, isn't it? I just turned up and get the hammer out and fucking go to town with a box of sake.
Well, it's pretty much what's happening with Evan here, to be honest.
I mean, I hit the sake barrel too hard. And because the other colleagues were like tap tap tap, and I was like, fuck it, I'll show you the power of Britain. And anyway. The sake went everywhere. Be careful when smacking the barrel. Alas, Evan continues. After the ceremony, we hit the drum, and we provided a small wooden mallet and a visual demonstration of what to do, which was lucky, as I was nowhere near fluent and was struggling to understand what was going on. It became my mission to break that drum, and so with a count, I forced both our hands and the mallet down as hard as I could towards the lid, and crack, Oh, crack it did. As the lid snapped and plunged into the sake drum, a large splash of sake erupted upwards into the air. Mission complete. Getting some real flashbacks here from this story. I was feeling ecstatic until I looked over at my wife's face. Her look, oh God, of shock, quickly transformed into one of humour, puzzled me. And it wasn't until some hours later that I found out that the lid had been pre-cracked and we were only supposed to give it a light tap. Yes, that's the same mistake yes. I made. What could have been a forgettable moment was captured by our wedding photographer, forever encapsulating my Guy Cocker Gym mistake. That's a great title for a book, isn't it? My Guy Cocker Gym mistake. The whole experience was just amazing. It was a memory that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. Well, hitting a thing with a hammer. I highly recommend the experience to anyone in a similar position. Love the podcast, guys. Wishing you all the best. Has anything ever happened like this with your partners? Evan, the idiot. That's a good story. That was good.
It was a good story. There you go. Yeah. I mean, because you hadn't heard it before... You did the exact same thing that Evan did, which is quite nice. I would say that, I mean, you both sound like fucking Shrek, by the way.
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing Shrek would do. Westerner, oh, I hit a thing with hammer. Boom. Oh, no, too hard.
I'm very proud of you two.
Very proud of you two. Cracking
foreigners,
stuff. Literally.
Foreigners rise
literally
up.
Cracking stuff, yeah.
Mm. I think as a foreigner in Japan, you feel like, you know, you often have to rise to the challenge and show how brilliant you are. And, like, yeah. You'll have, like, men just
get
be
excited.
Like, arm wrestle the snare. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, masculinity. And then they'll be like, drinking the snare. And you have to, like, drink them and then fucking
right.
hit things
and
with
kissing.
Hammers. Like, you have to, like, prove yourself and show.
Right.
Have you seen that the TV show Shogun recently? He's had to do that in Shogun as well, the guy in there.
Right. What does he have to do in old school times,
so to,
like, show his but in this TV show, presumably he has to, I don't know, wave a sword around or something.
No, he has to drink some swordsman under a table, and then the guy who's going to become like the shogun, he's like, let us jump off this boat and have a swimming contest. And the guy's like, all right. And so this Japanese, like, future shogun, him dive off the boat and, like, swimming. Everything is like a competition. And, yeah, you'll experience that too if you visit Japan. But this ceremony is called Kagami Biraki. And Kagami means, like, mirror. And I think it's, like, breaking the mirror, right? It's a symbolic thing.
Right.
Breaking the mirror. I'm really cool memory, actually. I often think of that because it was so surreal. This just being, like, hoisted up in front of a crowd of teachers at this, like, event in, I think it was January, and it was, like, the opening of the year party, and just in front of 100 people just being like, oh, fucking show you! Ah! Like, it's just weird, but a beautiful aspect of the culture, a beautiful part of Japanese culture. But what isn't beautiful, and we've talked about foreigners doing things in Japan this week, one foreign passenger did something naughty on a train, and this is just off the back of me making a video last week called Foreign Tourists versus Japan, right? A worsening situation. Talking about how foreign tourists have done some shit things in Japan, like touch kimonos and geisha, harass people in Kyoto, trash temples and scratch their name, Julian, into a fucking 1,200-year-old building. And this is another story. And it's sort of a sad one, right? But I'll let you take over, Pete. What's going on the Thunderbird train, which sounds a lot cooler than it is?
Well, it sounds like very much like somebody's Kagami Biraki'd a train conductor, Chris, to be honest. West Japan Railway and its passengers were preparing to bid a bittersweet goodbye to the full service of the Thunderbird Special Express, which I think is a lovely name for a train, which has connected Osaka with Kanazawa since 1964. There's now loads of different ways to get over there, and much quicker at that. And so this was the last day, of the full-length Thunderbird route was March the 15th, but the day before, loads of fans were riding the train because they wanted one last, because, you know, Japanese people love their trains.
They love it.
Have done.
Love it.
And they always will. So the day before, loads of train enthusiasts were on there enjoying the final full-length Thunderbird route. But in the middle of this journey on the 14th, fans experienced the train's PA system crackling into life. The police are investigating an incident that has occurred on board, delaying the service. A foreign passenger, apparently, was asleep, and when the conductors came by, they asked to see his Tokyukan, or Special Express ticket. The passenger, a Caucasian male, didn't have one and instead became agitated and shoved the conductor. The ruckus, the train made a 40-minute stop at Tsuruga Station, where more police were waiting. There's a lot of foreigners in Japan who sort of go, the people are picking on me because I'm foreign. He pushed a conductor for crying out loud. Apparently, passengers, when they're travelling on this train, they must pay for two kinds of tickets. They've got one ticket, which covers the base fare from one place to another. But then you've got another one, the Tokyukan, covers the additional surcharge required to ride faster long-distance express trains, such as the Thunderbird or the Shinkansen. And there's also the possibility, the piece writes that he knew what he was doing and was just pretending to be asleep, which we've all done at times. Oh, I've just woken up. I'm so tired. I don't need to get involved with the world.
The guy
should just pay for his ticket, but instead he got up and got a bit physical with the train conductor. So he'll probably face charge. He'll face something, but it's just a bit sad that all of the train enthusiasts who were waiting to experience their favourite train one last time, deal with delays.
It's like having the last flight of Concorde and then being physically all sick all over the pilot. It sort of overshadows.
What you're doing in the cockpit. Mind you, the 90s.
It was the 90s. It was. No, Concorde's last flight was in 2003. But
the 90s.
Alas.
Hey. Oh, right. Alas. Yeah, right. Yeah.
The Tokyukan thing, they check your train ticket on a lot of local trains in Japan, right? It's not, he didn't go, white man, he must be lying. He hasn't bought a ticket. He goes from person to person and checks.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he shoved him there. That's just really twatty behaviour. Like, well, I'll show you. Wow. It's kind of like,
maybe he thought,
just a bit
very
twatty.
Much like, you know, like when Sonic the Hedgehog gets hit, loads of rings come out. Maybe if he pushed him, some tickets would come out and he could use it.
Coin drop. Yeah, it's a shame, though. Because then, I think I saw this on the Japanese media in the news or whatever. It was like, you know, there's these like jubilant crowds waving goodbye to the Thunderbird train. It's like, everybody was so happy to see the Thunderbird train roar off down the railway line. But then a man who wasn't Japanese shoved the train conductor on his last journey. Yeah. And it's kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake, why'd you do that, you dickhead? Why? Yeah. You wouldn't do that normally anywhere. Why would you shove the train conductor? Honestly.
Don't shove the train conductor, dickish. For crying out loud.
Dickish behaviour. But of course, I've spent a lot of time calling out foreign tourists and foreigners doing shit things in Japan. But make no mistake, the Japanese media does latch onto it in a way that we don't in the West. Obviously, we in the West love talking about migrants and stuff like that, foreign migrants and all that sort of stuff, and in an awful way, how that's covered. But we don't really cover foreign tourists doing bad things. Here in Japan, they love it. They latch onto it. It's kind of like good viewing figures, right, to talk about stuff like that. Nevertheless, absolute dickhead. What was he thinking? There's no fine to be had here, really. Just a slap on the wrist and maybe thrown in a fucking river. I don't know. That's my justice. Throw him in a river.
Vigilante justice, yeah.
I think the crowds waiting at the other end of the Thunderbird line should have been able to grab him and just toss him into the Tsuruga River or something, which is a river I may or may not have made up. Oh, yeah. That's that as well. I don't know why they got rid of the Thunderbird train. I think it's because they've just opened up the Shinkansen line, from Tokyo to Fukui, which is kind of cool. They're always expanding, ever expanding, the bullet train. I love it. Don't know what this was. But, I'm...
HS2. Come on, HS2, you can do it.
Oh, God, don't get me started on that. Japanese rail operators, they run a tight ship, and it's hard to get away with doing stuff like this, you know. Don't shove the train conductor. A bit of advice there for your trip to Japan that hopefully you won't do, because unlike this guy, you're not a dickhead. Back in just a moment, guys, your stories, comments and questions over in the fax machine. Now we're back with the fax machine. I have to say, one thing I didn't point out a minute ago with the Thunderbird story, as somebody who loves the Thunderbirds, the TV series from the 60s, the Thunderbird train has no affiliation with the Thunderbirds.
Very few Thunderbirds. You don't know who's driving it. Parker could be driving.
Imagine if it was like, like the thing tune as we rock it down fucking Ibaraki or wherever it is.
Could they not just sort of like, could they not just make the little MIDI file play like a different tune? When the doors open. That's it. Yeah.
Missed opportunity. Missed opportunity. Bring back the Thunderbird train, reinstate it, put that song on.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow. Well, we've got a story or a question from Derek. Over to you, Mr. Donaldson. What's going on in the fax machine?
Derek from Arizona. Dear Chris and Pete, my question is for Pete. Yes, finally, a question for me. We've seen Chris decorate all manner of vehicles on his various journey across Japan, from bikes to vans, using only items from Daiso or other similar types of shops. I mean, decorating, Derek, I have to say, is a loose definition of what Chris is doing. I mean, he is transforming. It's like Pimp My Ride with that bloke. It's just kind of creating these automotive and bicyclic creations. Basically sticking an N64 controller on some handlebars. The next time Chris visits England, would you allow Chris to decorate your import way he does in his videos? I'm sure it would be a blast for everyone. Love and melon pan. Derek from Arizona. I've recently imported a car from Japan and it's still just sitting on somebody's drive because the DVLA...
Oh, no.
I'd like you to decorate my car with some registration plates if you would, Chris, because the DVLA so far have been unable to do so. They took 3 weeks to tell me. They took 3 weeks to send me a letter with all of my application materials sent back to me saying, you haven't given us enough money for the first year of the tax. So just give me 6 months tax. I don't care. I just need it on the road. So yeah, they're not in my good books.
Pete.
This is just extending and extending and extending.
I have to ask, having fought a lengthy battle to get this vehicle, do you or have you at any point regretted doing this? Because I certainly
Yeah, I mean, you know, times are tight. Times are tight after a tax bill, and you think about the things you spent your money on, and yeah, that's definitely in there, in the old
tax
noggin.
Tax deductible. Can you charge the car as a business expense?
Well, I'll talk about it enough on this, maybe. I don't know. Turn it into a. If I sort of put some microphones in, the amount of times I mentioned it on every podcast I'm on, because it is a real albatross round the old neck. Is it an albatross round your neck, or does the albatross just buzz around your head, bothering you? I don't know. Yeah,
albatross on the neck. It's like my dad.
Real shame. It's a real shame.
I hope to see the car at some point this year when I'm back. I'd love to see it, touch it, and destroy it.
Mooching
even more.
Around.
We've got a story from Dylan, who says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. Chris, I remember you liked the Nakagin Capsule Tower. Did they ever do anything with the capsules that you know of? Any other particular cool buildings to shout out for us? Thanks for making the podcast so enjoyable to listen to." Dylan from Tacoma.
Tacoma.
It's in Arizona. Is that a Tacoma?
Yeah.
Tacoma?
Well, you kind of said it like a Japanese name place, and I very much enjoyed it.
Tacoma.
Instead of Tacoma.
Indeed, I did. Nakagin Capsule Tower, special place in my heart. My favourite building in Japan. It was the building that had like 250 capsules. People used to live in them, call them home.
It's like a washing machine.
And then, well, yeah, they look like washing machines and meets sort of like Jenga. And it was really cool. I love that building. And I was in Shinbashi just yesterday, actually, where it is. And I looked up and it wasn't there. It's I can't remember if they've built a new building there now, like a generic apartment block. It's a very lucrative piece of land, so I'm not surprised they got rid of it. But I think they've taken a few capsules and a few museums have them. So you can still see the capsules in different museums.
They were very like sort of like, what did Starfield call their tech? Like sort of NASA futurist kind of, they look really kind of 1960s, 1970s kind of future sci-fi kind of capsule. They were incredible, but I imagine full of asbestos.
yes, just like the Nakagin Capsule Tower was, I think.
I'm obsessed with
You're obsessed with asbestos, Pete.
I'm obsessed with asbestos. It's a fascinating, destructive stuff. There's a Reddit page where basically, if you think you've got asbestos... actually, there's two that I very much enjoy. The asbestos Reddit page and also the Is This a Hidden Camera page.
Oh, my God.
People finding things in their walls. Or just like just looking at a wall and going, has this got asbestos in it? And then going on the Reddit page, taking a picture of their own wall, going, I think this might have asbestos in it. There's no indication there's any asbestos in it. It's just a fucking wall. And they're going, it's not crumbling. It doesn't look like there's fibres in there. It's just a wall. It's just a wall, mate. Don't worry about it. But all of these asbestos experts are going, right, okay, what can you scrape a bit? That, you know, can you see into the wall? I mean, we just can't tell from this vantage point on the internet. And there's also other people as well who put their pictures of when they're in hotel rooms and Airbnbs and stuff, things they think are cameras looking at them, and they are never cameras. They're always just like automated air fresheners in toilets. They're always motion detecting devices and stuff. Everyone thinks they're under surveillance even more than they actually are. Kinky stuff.
Bloody hell, man. I'm going to buy you some asbestos for your birthday so you can put it all over your car.
Chomp
and
on
roll
it.
Around in it all fucking afternoon like a sheep. I must say, though, very, very sad the Nakagan building's gone. I've got into some debate with some people on Twitter about it, and in the YouTube comments, they were like, it's a hideous building, it's ugly, I hate it. It's like, you might not like it, but you've got to admit it's pretty cool and unique, and... It's gone. There's just going to be another generic apartment block building that looks the same as anything else, right? I'm all for, like, renovation, reconstruction. It's probably just be a 7-Eleven and a fucking karaoke booth or a hotel. It's going to be rubbish, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm always sad to see historic architecture go. You know, the movement was a big deal in the early 70s. It's called, like, the
The metabolobbles.
Metabolic architecture. I can't remember. But there was it was a big part of, and the guy that built it, Kishore Kurokawa. He was the one that came up with capsule hotels, actually, the first capsule hotel in Osaka. So, you know, and his legacy's gone. At the same time, when he was building it, he was like, "It'll be amazing. You can pick up your capsule and go whenever you want." Well, that didn't quite happen, because removing one capsule would bring the whole building down. So he didn't think too far ahead, old Kishore Kurokawa. But and I can see why they got rid of it, given it was an absolute state. But I wish somebody a little bit earlier down the line, like 20, 30 years ago, had sort of looked at it and gone, if we don't fix it up now, it's fucked. And they didn't, and it's gone. And I'm very sad about that. So let's take care of our old buildings. In terms of buildings to check out, there's a Buddha I visited with Pete Premier 2 in Hokkaido. In Sapporo, I think it's called the Hill of the Buddha, and it's a Buddha in what looks like a missile silo. And it's in the video, like the road trip we did across Hokkaido, and there's just this Buddha in this like concrete underground silo, and it's the most incredible thing. Also, the Umeda Sky Building in Osaka is pretty epic as well. You know, both pretty futuristic-y, postmodern-looking buildings. We've got a question here from. Last question from Will from Wisconsin, who says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. In 2024, I set out to learn Japanese with the aid of my local university night course. We use the Genki books, and it's been quite a challenge. As we move from basic statements to forming basic sentences, I'm finding it overwhelming at times. My question for you both is, how did you go about learning Japanese, and how do you keep motivated when it seems too much? Looking for some advice. All the best, guys. Will from Wisconsin." Well, Pete, as somebody who's fluent in Japanese, how have you done it? How do you stay motivated? Share your secrets with us. Chigaimasu.
Nihongo Vengashimasu Muzukashi desu. It is difficult, isn't it? Transferring from like remembering a bit of vocab, which I think is the most important thing about learning a language, surely. Like, if you can just get the major words in your noggin, then people kind of understand you. Like, you can just point at stuff and go, this is difficult, this is hot, this is cold. Like, that's mainly... British people, all we do is drink tea and point at the weather and go, hot, cold, Can't wait for it to be hot again. Can't wait for it to be cold again. Just learn those sentences. But it is just like word orders and markers and counting words and stuff like that. Difficult and knowing which order in which to place words and stuff. And that's not something that I've ever nailed, so sadly. But I would say, remember I was talking about that game. And again, not affiliated with it. I've not been paid. I've not, I must admit, Ryan did send me a code for it. Which I've not used yet because I'm actually trying. I've just not had time. Shishingo, the Learn Shishingo. Japanese with Photography video game, I think is coming out on the Switch later on.
The Japanese
soon,
version of Susudie by Phil Collins.
Shishingo. So I think Shishin is a picture, isn't it? And
yes.
Lingo or I don't know.
Go means like Nihongo. Word. Oh yeah, you mentioned this. This was quite a cool idea.
It's just like a sort of little kind of like Yakuza side game writ large, sort of going around town photographing things and learning the vocabulary and words and for different bits. And I've still not played it, but Ryan very kindly sent me a code, which I will be doing on a flight to WrestleMania very soon. It got reviewed really, really well. But like all kind of indie development, it's really fucking hard because I think Ryan's all by himself doing it. So hopefully more to come from him. But pick that up if you can. It's good, just good for little vocabulary bits as I've seen on the videos and stuff. Great.
I think like motivation. When I was at university, I tried to do some Japanese courses. I failed. I bombed because I'm sort of like the person who's like, I'll do it on the night. I'll do it in the moment, in the action.
Yeah.
It's hard to get excited about something when there's no tangible benefit there and then to learning it, right? Which is a pretty big
and also
thought.
Classroom kind of, also classroom dynamic, especially classroom. if there's people who in a room is better than me at something. I just don't want to fucking do it. And with language learning and a lot of stuff in life, I don't want to do it because everyone's good and they've worked harder and they remember stuff quicker. And people learn in different ways, isn't it?
And I remember in that class, there was about, I think it was about 15 people, and they watched like One Piece. And I was like, I don't know what One Piece is. And they all knew certain words, like how to say pirate in Japanese. And they all had one level above me. And I had no motivation until I got to Japan. Then I was extremely motivated, and I went really hard on studying more than anything I've ever done in my life. That first year in particular, I was like head down in the room, and you just didn't see me outside of work. I'd be in my room studying like a maniac. And I'd say to you, Will, come to Japan. Try and set like a date in your book, something that you're going to Japan, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And that'll be your guiding star, right? Something to get fired up about. Like, I'm going to Japan in December. I want to be conversationally fluent by then. And if you complete Genki 1 and 2, you can be conversationally fluent. You get by in pretty much any situation. You need something like that to get you excited about it, really. Or maybe watching Japanese TV or films as well, having the subtitles on to learn. But, yeah, really, for me, I'd love to learn Spanish again. I learned it at school. I was pretty shit. But I love learning it, and I think if I was going to learn it, I would need to be like, right, I'm going to spend 3 months in Spain next year, and I'm going to start studying now. And only then would I be fired up and motivated to learn, I think. So, something you can't really force upon yourself, unfortunately. But I will say, after the first 3 to 6 months of studying Japanese, it does start to get a lot easier if you put in the effort outside the classroom hours, which you're going to have to if you want to show some real progress. But I've got a fair few videos on learning Japanese. Check them out on the Abroad in Japan YouTube channel, which is quite good. But for now, guys, keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you right back here, guys, to do it all over again later in the week. But for now, have yourself a great few days and study some Japanese. Study hard and don't push any train conductors. But for now, bye, everyone. Have yourself a bloody good week. Take care.
Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.